Welcome to the Subtle Reformation Podcast. We're so glad that you can join us. I'm one of the hosts, Ben.
And I'm Stephen. And we're really glad that you've joined us to listen to us muse about formation and what it means for who and how we can be in this world.
Well, welcome back to the Subtle Reformation. It's great to have you joining us on the podcast today. Today we got Stephen, Julia, Tom and myself, and we are kicking off our contemplation experiment. The last few weeks we've been building up to this, and today is the day that we're going to kick things off. And to do that, I'm going to throw over to you, Stephen, and you're going to help us understand a little bit about what exactly it is we are doing.
Well, let's get real quick, Ben.
Okay.
In my mind right now is Adrian Pimento from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, because the little conversation we were having, well, it was quite a lengthy conversation that we were having prior to recording. All of a sudden, Brooklyn Nine-Nine came up just before we hit the record button. And I'm thinking of that episode where Adrian Pimento is in his apartment doing yoga in his underwear. And
Oh, yeah, that's a classic.
Yeah, Peralta and Boyle are watching him from the streets. So there you go. What's in your mind?
Contemplation.
Yeah. So it's good to be here. It's good to see the beautiful faces. It's early morning recording, but it's starting to get sunnier earlier, which is nice. So this is what we've been building up to in season two. It's a staged process where... So effectively, it's an assignment that I've set for students the last couple of years, but the assignment has grown over probably the last 15 years as I've worked with Rowan in particular, and we've looked at trying to develop a structured process to invite people into what is historically a significant part of the Christian tradition, which is prayer as contemplation. And this is the first part, and I was thinking I might just read from the assessment to protect our listeners from my waffling.
Yeah, no, sounds good.
So we talk about the task summary. It's an overarching structure of spiritual formation employed is this invitation to engagement in what we call the contemplative stance. So the assessment requires you to submit a series of journal entries that reflect on the various steps in the process. And recording is important. And I think talking about how we record, because personalities are different. We talked about this a little bit in the previous episode, but figuring out a way of recording that is going to work for you as a participant is really important. So you want to give that some thought. Just scrolling down, having a look. So reading from the background here, one of the most basic spiritual practices passed down through the Christian tradition, but seemingly lost to the contemporary church, is the art of becoming consciously present to self and God. I might just repeat that. The seemingly lost to the contemporary church is the art of becoming consciously present to self and God. So this entails detaching from the thoughts, the cares, the worries, and the guilt that entangle us, such that we can see ourselves more clearly and potentially see God more clearly as well. So at the heart of the practice is the observation that the pathway to discover what lies beneath the trappings of your life is found in the movement into silence and into presence. Silence and presence reveals your true self. And I think that's one thing that we've seen in spades during lockdown. People are finding themselves either alone or with the same group of people that they can't avoid. And we're starting to see who we really are in those moments. The problem is your true self has become buried under many layers, and to some extent these layers have unconsciously almost taken control of your life without you even knowing it. Hence, becoming conscious is one of the most powerful acts of spirituality that you've engaged in. It's funny how you sound a whole lot smarter when you're forced to write your thinking and to distill it down in non-waffly ways. There is a catch as well. And this is something that I think it's really important to highlight. The first few layers that you work through can actually be quite messy. When you begin contemplation, things can actually become worse or seemingly worse before they get better. The first few layers are messy. They can be uncomfortable. They can be unfamiliar as well, realizing that there are some things inside of you that you didn't realize were there. And it can actually be somewhat frightening, if not terrifying, realizing the things that are there when you still yourself. For the most part, you won't actually want to do this. There will actually be a resistance to slowing down, stopping, and observing. And unfortunately, our culture facilitates that speed, moving along. You know, nothing to see here, just continue to be active, continue to be entertained, continue to be preoccupied. Our closing statement was spirituality is not for the faint-hearted. So that's the intro. I might just pause there for a minute. Anything in there that leaps out at your team?
I think for me, one of the things that stands out is literally that last line. Firstly, spirituality is not for the faint-hearted, I think is what you said. I think that's just something for all of us to think about. Like sometimes these things, when we're stepping into try and be more aware of God's presence or be more faithful to our walking in step with Jesus and following him and being more like him, it's actually not necessarily that easy. There's some things that we're invited to do that definitely go against our own self-interest, our own ego, our own desire to protect ourselves. And I think there's some times where you are going to be confronted with some things that you're like, oh, I didn't realize I believed that about myself or thought that was how people saw me or whatever else comes up as God comes and brings it to the surface. But, you know, it's a loving thing at the same time for us to become aware of those things so that God can begin to heal them and help us become more whole and more free and less bound by some of these subconscious things. So yeah, it's definitely not for the faint hearted, but it's also, I think, for those who want to really make sure that their lives are as whole and healed as they can be. So yeah, that would be just some encouragement that I got out of hearing that and listening to that again.
Julia, at the risk of putting you on the spot, you've been nodding vigorously over there while Ben's been talking.
I mean, always wanting to put a positive spin, which Ben did do anyway on it, is the idea that I think I mean, yes, it's not for the faint-hearted, absolutely, but I think there's something in us that kind of feels like if we're confronted by mess and, you know, things that we didn't realize about ourselves, that somehow that's going to disqualify us or cast us out from the presence of God. And I guess I just want to say that what seems like it's really scary and confronting is usually the pathway to healing, like being healed. But it's that kind of, it's because it's like a process. It doesn't just, it's not like it's an instant sort of, okay, I'm going to, you know, be confronted by this, I'm going to deal with it, and then it's going to go. But yeah, just really, I think that idea, because I'm just thinking back to when I started, in earlier recordings, I guess I just want to speak in the space of people who haven't done this sort of stuff before, as you guys have, to say just stick at it. Whether you show up for a minute or the whole 10 minutes, I mean, the fact that you've shown up is great, and just don't quit. Just don't quit. Even when, you know, there is things that come up, because I can assure you, as someone who had to stick at it for quite a while, and I won't tell you how long because that'll put everyone off. It does. You know, there's a point. There's turning points where you go, like the penny starts to drop, and you realize that this is really, really great. But it's the invitation of God into, you know, coming deeper into the presence of God, and that God is not going to go, oh, I never knew that about you. Oh, I'm so upset that you're like that. You know, it's already known. So, yeah, chill.
I want to make the case that everybody is doing this all the time. We're actually doing this all the time. A couple of days ago, sorry, I'm going to pause. We talked about the Enneagram. I'm a one. Ones are very sensitive to judgment and hear judgment in everything, whether there is judgment or not. And I can't remember what exactly happened, but something happened. And one of my children said, you're a hypocrite, which is about as, it's not just pushing the button. It's like, you know, constantly jabbing at the button, you know, bang, 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 bang. You're a hypocrite. And I felt all of the defenses rise to the surface. And in that moment, I thought, I can either react. Well, it's not going to be a reaction. It's going to be an overreaction. Or I can try to take a few deep breaths here and try to see what they're seeing. And normally what we would do is we wouldn't do that. We wouldn't say, let's take a few deep breaths and see what they see. Normally what we would do is we would react. So that's contemplative. Something was brought to our attention in some way and we've responded to it. So we do this all the time. It comes out anyway. So what we're saying to people is, do what you normally do, but actually do it on your terms rather than on other people's. Rather than waiting for something to ambush you, make some time to allow these things to come out that in a far more semi-controlled rather than controlled, because it can never be entirely controlled. Tom, what are you grinning at, buddy?
Yeah, you said that your real self comes out when you're put in a situation where you're stuck with a lot of people. All my brothers and I have all moved home, and all of us are stuck in a house, six of us in total. Boundaries have dissolved. I feel like I'm a sort of big brother, to be honest with you. And you said your real self comes out in these situations. I hope this isn't the real me. Because I think we're all just reacting a lot of the time to just having no space. It's just really personally challenging. Yesterday I was in a really bad mood, and I never really get in a bad mood. But when I'm in a bad mood, I just get quiet and I just try and regulate myself. I just try and like deal with it internally. And I've got people with me all the time, and they're chirpy and happy or like they're whatever. And I'm just like, I just want to be alone, but there's nowhere to go. It's just, so yeah, I think contemplation, my whole family will probably benefit from me doing it. Yesterday I found myself complaining about the ducted heating. I never care about that. It's so dumb. Yeah, I probably need to take a little more time to have a space in between reacting and experiencing for sure. So. I think they'll benefit from me doing this.
So, Tom, at the risk of conjuring up a whole bunch of feelings of embarrassment and shame for you, out of the four of us, you were the only person who was invited to do this as an assessment, as a structured assessment. And you had a particular experience of this. Did you want to share how you felt and what you thought when you were first confronted with this as an assessment, and the degree to which you did or didn't engage in it? And as I said, the reason I'm asking is not to embarrass or shame you, but I think that your reaction the first time round is going to be incredibly similar to everybody's reaction when they're introduced to something like this for the first time.
Yeah, I remember receiving it and already having a pile of assignments that I wasn't doing. I didn't do many of my assignments. This one just came and I looked at it and I went, oh, seems easy enough. And I went through and read the end and it said what you were looking for in the reflection that was going to prove that we did it. And I remember you also saying that you would know. You're like, don't fudge it at the end. Don't fudge up some random summary. I'm going to know if you did it or not. And so I'm like, drats. That's all I had. That was my chance of getting this done. So I think I tried it once or twice. I really liked the idea of doing it, but realistically, I just didn't have the discipline to be able to follow anything through at that point for more than just to that level, especially. So I didn't really even think I was going to be able to do that amongst the other things that I had to do.
Hmm. You said it was an attractive proposition. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Oh, yeah, I like the idea of it. I thought it sounded really nice. I imagine myself sitting in a picnic chair in the middle of beautiful wilderness, just contemplating life and figuring out all my problems.
Sorry, everyone's falling off their chairs laughing while Tom is talking. You're missing the visuals here, but keep going, Tom.
I just imagine leaves blowing around and music playing in the background and me just sitting there like a Master Yoda monk floating in the air. I was like, this is going to be great. I'm going to have a great time. You know, but that didn't happen. It wasn't that easy. I did it twice before I realized that it wasn't like that. It wasn't that enjoyable.
Can you remember what actually happened the couple of times you did do it?
Yeah, I do. I think I remember the whole, however long, half an hour, 45 minutes, before the 10 minutes that I was thinking about doing it being the most difficult part. It was just starting that was really difficult and frustrating because I'm thinking about all the things I've got to do in the day. Somehow that's in there. That doesn't make any sense to want to do that. It doesn't feel productive. It doesn't feel like it adds to your life. So yeah, I don't know, probably the first 45 minutes beforehand is of procrastinating or doing other things, being through the list of things for the day. It just seems like that's the one that's got to go, if anything at all. Why would I preserve that, my schedule when I'm busy? So, but yeah, I remember getting to the end of it. And even though it was only 10 minutes, it was probably the 45 minutes beforehand where I thought about doing it and procrastinated and did a bunch of other things. It felt like 45 minutes because, you know, I took so long running up to it. But the 10 minutes itself is always so weird to think it's only 10 minutes because it feels like it's always so much longer with all the distraction and procrastinations that actually starting that first minute.
That's really helpful, Tom. The things that we've learned over the years is prior to just springing this on people, and we probably should have spoken about this a little bit in previous episodes, but we'd actually introduce students to some other exercises first. So one of the simple ones is breathing. So breathing in through your nose, taking 3 seconds to breathe in and then 3 seconds to exhale through your mouth. And just getting people to do that for 5 or 10 minutes. And there's all sorts of material you can access around breathing as an introduction to contemplation. But it's just getting people back into their bodies. And then also there's the stream of consciousness stuff as well, which is sitting with a notebook and just writing. You don't take the pen off the page. You just keep writing whatever's in your mind. And I remember when we first started experimenting with getting people to do those sorts of exercises prior to this, sitting for 10 minutes. And I'm always mindful. I always remember an episode of The Simpsons that's a parody of the Stephen King novel, The Shining. They go to this hotel and Homer's trying to write a novel and they realize towards the end of the episode that whenever he goes away and is typing on the typewriter, the only thing he's typing is kill Flanders, kill Flanders, kill Flanders, kill Flanders. Like, there's just ream upon ream of, you know, kill Flanders. And whenever we introduce people, particularly to the stream of consciousness writing exercise, I'm expecting something like, this is stupid, this is stupid, this is stupid, why am I doing it? If that's what you're thinking when you sit for 10 minutes, note it down, record it. If you're finding that in the 10 minutes that you set aside, you're thinking about your thinking, if you're thinking about the exercise, if being an observer is actually changing what it is that you're thinking, just record that. That's fine. And that's not uncommon. It takes us a while. It's like the first time you hear your own voice coming through a like a sound system. You think, oh, that's really strange. Wow, is that what I sound like? Do people hear me? But eventually you forget that and you revert back to who you normally are the first time you see yourself recorded on a screen. There's this moment of, oh, this is really strange, but eventually you become comfortable and you revert to who you normally are. So the first few sessions might be just recording things that you've never thought about before because you're observing yourself. But the goal is just 10 minutes and just observe. Just observe what it is that you think, observe what it is that you feel. And because we briefly touched on the Enneagram, one of the things we didn't talk about is, I was listening to the episode too, by the way, Ben, and how many times did I say 8 rather than 9? There's actually 9 times.
Yeah, I know. It was wild.
Oh, dear Lord. And no one corrected me. One of the things that we didn't talk about in the Enneagram episode is the 9 types are actually arranged into 3 groups of 3. So there's the head center, the heart center, and the gut center. So observe what it is that you're thinking, the head center. Observe what it is that you're feeling, the heart center. But then what is often missed when we talk about the contemplative life is what you feel in your body, which is the gut center, the 8, 9, and 1. So just observe what's going on in your head, what's going on in your feelings, what's going on in your body, and just record it. And you don't have to share it with anybody. This is starting to collect some data. So you've got something, because you need that initial body of data to begin working with. So that's really all we're asking people to do. 10 minutes a day, just as best you can, force yourself to have an out-of-body experience and observe that person that is you. What goes on in their mind? What do they feel, and what do they feel in their body? And again, the caveat, sitting still might actually bring to the surface some painful things, some difficult things, some traumatic things. As best you can, record that, and you're going to run the risk of re-traumatizing yourself. But as I said, it's going to come out anyway. Those things come out in the cut and thrust of life, of our interactions. So when, and not if, when those things rise to the surface, they're going to be painful, but it's a semi-controlled environment. And you'll probably be surprised the amount of times, because often, you know, people will say, oh, I've dealt with that. That's in the past. I've moved on. But we haven't. We still live in that place unconsciously. So that's all we're asking. 10 minutes a day, observe thoughts, feelings, and what's going on in your body. And we mentioned briefly a couple of days ago in the previous episode, the way in which I record it is I try to put a word or a couple of words as a list. So as I try to think about what's in my mind right now, my mind goes blank. My mind is blank. There you go. My mind is blank. So mind blank. You know, I'm just writing this down, slash trying too hard. That's what's in my mind. And then I write it down. And then if that pops up again in my 10 minutes, I just put a little downward stroke to count 1, another downward stroke, 2, 3, 4. When I get to 4, then slash through the 4, 5. That's how I record it. again, we mentioned in the previous episode, I'm going to do this first thing in the morning. I'm going to prop myself up in bed and have a little notebook next to me, which is going to be tricky because I sleep on the left-hand side and I'm right-handed. My partner sleeps on the right-hand side, so my writing might wake her up. Although she's a pretty serious sleeper, I don't know. Yeah. Check in with me this time next week and let me know how my marriage is going.
Yeah, we'll definitely do that.
Yeah. How about you guys? Final thoughts?
I think my final thoughts are just I'm looking forward to getting into it. I'll be honest, I've kind of started doing a little bit of it anyway, just because we've talked about it.
Cheater.
I can't help it. I can't help it. I'm competitive. I want to do the best. So, I just was reminded about how important it was. I was like, I'm not going to do it in terms of an assessment or like trying to notice these things, but I've just found opportunities to be still at little moments just throughout the day, just a little bit more. So I'm obviously trying to do it in the morning as in this 10 minutes, but just through the last week, just like, oh, you know what? I'm just going to take a couple of minutes, just go and get out of the office and sit and be still somewhere, or, you know, just find some time to sit and be, which has been good. So I'm looking forward to doing it a little bit more intentionally and for a little bit longer than just a couple of minutes. So it's going to be good.
Have you tried recording anything at this stage?
No, I've just been like, I'm just slowing down. Probably, if anything, it's probably going to help me be able to lean into the 10 minutes a bit more. I've warmed up.
Stretching.
Yeah, that's right.
Time at the gym.
Yeah.
How about you, Julia? Any closing thoughts?
No, just looking forward to doing it, and actually quite thankful that it wasn't a few months ago, because I think that things are in my I'm not saying that my mind's, you know, all sorts of things will come up, but I think my mind a few months ago was certainly reeling in all that 2020 is and probably will continue to be. So it's good. I'm looking forward to it too.
There's a new meme doing the rounds of the internet. It's Back to the Future. It's the professor talking to Marty McFly saying, you know, rule number one of time travel, don't go back to 2020. How about you, Tom?
Yeah, I think it will be good for my soul and for my mind. But I don't know. Yeah, in a week's time, I'm excited to see what it does for me and how transformed my life is.
Beautiful.
It surely can't be too different in 1 week's time. But if I can just say that I've done it every day for a week, I'll be proud of myself.
And that was the warning I gave every time I issued the assessment, because the assessment was you needed to do this, you know, 10 minutes a day, make your observations. And then at the end of, well, depending on what year you did the assessment, because sometimes you did it for a month, sometimes you just did it for a week. But at the end of the time, you reflected, you wrote 250 words on what did I observe over that period of time. And it's hilarious when you get journal entries from people who haven't done the 10 minutes a day, but are trying to imagine their reflections. And that's what I said, Tom. It's so bleeding obvious that they haven't done it. They're making things up. And so they would get a vicious fail from me. You're wasting my time.
But this is the gift of a seven, right? We are masters, absolute masters. So all those people out there who think they can get away with. So my son last year didn't, actually, maybe I shouldn't say this on a podcast, but for English, he didn't read the books. He didn't read them. He just wrote essays on books because he watched some movies. And so sevens are renowned, well, you know, confessional with, of firstly, of laughing, Tom, at your imaginary, this is what it's going to be like, beautiful, you know, because somehow sevens imagine it in this euphoric sort of, you know, it's never dull. It's like we are in this, you know, enlightened space that it's going to be amazing. And then the reality hits. We're masters at being able to almost fake it till you make it. So, Stay tuned.
Beautiful. Well, I think it's time to stick a fork in us, Ben.
Brilliant. Well, I guess that means we're done. So we're looking forward to you guys picking up the challenge of our contemplation exercise. And we'd love to hear from you as well. So as you go through this, please feel free to reach out via Anchor, Facebook, Instagram, wherever you are listening or connecting with us. And yeah, other than that, we hope you have a fantastic week and look forward to connecting with you next week as we share some reflections on our contemplation experience.